Ksuvas Perik Ches Mishnah Zayin 8-7. The Mishnah discusses the payment of the ksuba and other financial considerations arising therefrom regarding a yavam once he takes over stepping into his late brother's shoes, marrying his wife, and taking over his assets. Now you'll recall that when it comes to a yavam, if he should perform yibum, which means that she, the widow of his late brother, moves in with him, they live together as husband and wife, and that marriage essentially continues on, if you will, whereas meaning that her ksuba, her original ksuba from her first husband, stays in full effect. The amount of the ksuba, as well as the shibudim, the liens that that ksuba created on the first husband's property. And she never gets paid her ksuba, even though she became a widow. If and when the yavam opts not to marry her and instead to do chalitza, then she would get her ksuba payment in full. So when the yavam takes over, stepping into his brother's shoes, essentially, he gets the brother's assets. He becomes the yoresh, like the sole heir and inheritor of his late brother's property by doing yibum, as well as he now is married to his late brother's wife. Now, in a regular marriage, no yibum, the husband gives his wife a ksuba. It promises that she'll get whatever it is, the Iker Ksuba 200 zuz, and let's pretend there's another 100 zuz is Tosef Ksuba, 300 zuz total. So then that 300 zuz is a guaranteed payment that she gets upon death or divorce of her husband, and it has a lien on all of the husband's property, meaning that hypothetically, if he would have sold a field to somebody else, and then when he dies, there isn't money to pay her ksuba, she, the widow, could go to the purchaser of that field and say, listen, I had the first lien, like as if the bank with the first mortgage, on that lien, on that property, the field that you bought, and therefore you have to either pay me the 300 zuz of my ksuba, or they would sell the field and she gets 300 zuz and he gets the residual, whatever the story is, and the point is that she has the first lien. Now, there's a machlokus that extends beyond the scope of this Mishnah in general, which is, on what sorts of property does she have a lien? According to the Chachamim, she has a lien just on real assets, on karka, things that are attached to the ground, like a field or a building or a tree. Whereas metaltalin chattels, like a suitcase full of money or a barrel full of apples, those are not encumbered at all. And if the husband of a regular marriage would sell the apples, or he would, you know, whatever, invest and lose the money, the suitcase full of money. So she has no recourse to the purchaser of the apples, etc. She can't go back and get them. It's just the real assets, just the karka, things attached to the ground. Rabbi Meir holds that her lien extends to all of his assets, both karka and metaltin, everything, including detached property. And therefore, if someone bought those apples from her, for example, she could go back and say, listen, those are my apples, they weren't his to sell, and you need to reimburse me so I can get paid out my ksuba. When it comes to a yibum situation, the yavam essentially takes on, I'll call it, the assets and liabilities of the first marriage. That means he gets all of his brother's stuff. He also has to stand behind the ksuba that she was given when they got married, that he's taking over now as the yavam. But, and this is really interesting, the lien that her ksuba had on the first husband's property, that stays in effect, but it's only his property that is encumbered, the first husband's properties, which means if the brother-in-law, the brother, the yavam, if he, you know, had a real estate portfolio of rental properties, and his brother, who now has passed away, had just, you know, farmlands, so when he, the yavam, marries the widow, the yavama, so it's just the farmlands that came over through the yibum process that are acting as collateral against the ksuba. But his rental properties that he owned before he did yibum, those are totally unencumbered. So that means he could sell them and she has no recourse to those properties. If he would sell the farmland and then there's not enough money left when he dies, she could go back to the purchase of the farmland and say, listen, I had first lien with my ksuba. Now, the rabbis made a takana, and that really becomes the focal point of our Mishnah. which is that we don't want to have this poor woman who's the widow now for a second time have to go and fight in court to get back what's rightfully hers, her ksuba payments from the purchasers of the farmlands who bought the lands from her second husband that originally were owned by her first husband. And therefore, the rabbi said that although the Yavam, the living brother, gets the great benefit of inheriting all of his late brother's property, so long as that property, so long as there's a lien on the property from the ksuba of the first wife, so he may not sell any of it. It all remains encumbered, and while we treat it essentially like nechsim malug, that it's as if it's her property, that he can get rights, you know, peros, rights to the produce. So that means the farmlands that this second brother inherits, so he can never sell them. But what he could do is, of course, you know, plant them and grow apples on the farmland and then, you know, make money off the apples. But the farmland itself always remains encumbered. He can never sell it because it's there to pay out her ksuba. Now, our mission says inside with that background. Hiniach achiv ma'os. If the brother who died left over money, a suitcase full of cash. And now this mission here is going like Rabbi Meir, who holds that cash also was leaned by the ksuba to the woman, to the wife. So therefore, when the Yavam inherits a suitcase full of cash, he's not free to spend it or invest it. To the contrary, he has to put it, invest it, and purchase something that will store value. Like with some previous Mishnayos, we'll call that the cherry orchard. And then he purchases the cherry orchard, which retains a value from which she can collect her ksuba ultimately, but he gets to the benefit of whatever cherries grow on the orchard. He can sell those and spend the money that he gets from selling the cherries. That's the Mishnah says here. Yilakach ben karka, that suitcase full of money, whatever other, you know, cash or whatever that he left behind when he died, all that money must be used to purchase land to protect her principal that's collateralizing her ksuba. Vahu ochel peros, but he buys the cherry orchard, but then he can eat the cherries that grow on the orchard. Very similarly, peros hatalushim in a karka. If when the first brother died, there were barrels of apples that had already been harvested, sitting in the barrels, that's also metaltlin. So Rabbi Meir, who's the Tana at this part of the Mishnah, holds those apples are also serving as collateral for the woman's ksuba. And therefore, the second husband who gets these apples may not spend them. Rather, he has to take the value of those apples or sell them, get the money, and then purchase, again, let's say a cherry orchard, storing the value to protect her ksuba, and then he, of course, can eat the cherries that grow, but he has to invest it to keep her collateral safe. The Mishnah says, peros hatalushim in a karka, so the barrel of apples that were detached from the ground, they're sitting in the barrels already, yilakach behen karka, the value of those apples have to be converted to money to purchase land, the cherry orchard, vahu ochel peros, and he then eats the cherries. Hamuchubarn bakarka. What about stuff that's still attached to the trees? So the apples are on the trees. So now, what's supposed to happen here is that we essentially take a photograph of the estate and all its assets at the moment of the first brother's death. And that estate is what's collateralizing her ksuba. This is Reb Meir still, so that would include the metalton, the chattels, the movables. And anything that happens after that, or peros, dividends, growth, output, you know, fruit that grows, all that stuff belongs to the new brother, free and clear, and she has no right to it. Doesn't collateralize her ksuba. So, if when the first brother dies, there were apples in the apple orchard growing on the trees, but let's say for argument's sake, they're only, you know, half of what they're only worth, a portion of what they would be worth if they left to be fully ripened. They're not fully ripened. So there was $100 of apples on the trees, but if we'd have left it till they fully ripened, they'd be worth $300. So the point is, since those apples are worth $100 now, there's an extra $100 of collateral going to guarantee her ksuba. So the Mishnah says, Hamuchubarim bakarka, apples still attached to the tree, meaning attached to the ground. They're still, so at the moment of his death, of the first husband, those are belong to her as collateral. Rabbi Meir, says, Shaman osan kamahen yafin beperos, vakamahen yafin below peros. We have to appraise how much is this apple orchard worth if the trees are laden with these half-grown fruits, and if there are no fruits in them at all. And we say, listen, it's an extra $100 worth of value to get this orchard as it is with the half-grown fruits. So then, vahamosar, that differential, that $100, yilakach behen karka, the brother who's now becoming the yavam, will have to lay out $100 out of his pocket. He'll have to purchase another, you know, cherry orchard with that money. V'hu ochel peros, and then whatever cherries grow on the cherry orchard, he can eat, of course, but the cherry orchard he can't sell because it's there to collateralize her ksuba. The chacham disagree that the chattels, the metals, and the movables are ever encumbered by her ksuba. So they say, and actually this first sentence, ironically, is not actually a machlokas. They're agreeing with Rabbi Meir that peros hamchubarim bekarka, the fruits that are still attached to the ground, the apples half grown on the trees, those are going to go towards collateralizing her ksuba. The Mishnah says shelo belong to him, which would be the second husband. The Gemara says that makes no sense whatsoever. Why in the world should they belong to him, the second brother? They belong to the first brother, and they were there when the first brother died, so they're part of his estate. They should really belong to collateralize her ksuba. And indeed, the Gemara says you should have to correct the text of the Mishnah. It should say shela belongs to her. So, like Rabbi Meir, the Chacham say the value of the half-grown apples that are already halfway grown at the moment of the death of the first husband, those go towards collateralizing her ksuba. And really the Chacham agrees with Rabbi Meir because those are still mechubar and bekarka, and the general rule is, notwithstanding what we saw earlier in the parak with an exception with the Nechse Malug, but in general, the rest of Kol HaTorah Kula, whatever is attached to the ground is like have a din like the ground, has a ruling as if it were ground. So the apples that are attached to the apple trees and the apple trees themselves all have a status of karka, and therefore they are indeed leaned by her ksuba. So we just take the value, and now we go towards protecting her, like Reb Meir said. Hatalusha minakarka, on the other hand, produce that already have been detached from the ground, so meaning at the moment of the first husband's death, the apples already sitting in barrels. So the chacham hold those are metaltlin, those movables do not collateralize her ksuba, and therefore they're free and clear for the living brother, the yavam, to do with whatever as he sees fit. They're not encumbered at all. Now the words of the Mishnah don't exactly say what they seem to be saying, don't mean what they seem to be saying. The din is going to be that the apples that are detached already from the ground at the moment of his death are unencumbered according to the Chum, and therefore the Yavam can take them, spend them, sell them, no problem, unlike the properties which he can't sell. However, there is a possibility that before her husband died, the first husband, the woman grabbed those barrel of apples and said, I'm holding these apples as collateral, as surety against my ksuba. I'm holding it as what's called a mashkon, some kind of collateral. So then that would work. I mean, if she would actually physically grab those apples and hold them as collateral while her husband's alive, that's the important part here, her first husband, so then yes, those apples are now going to also be sort of held by her as some collateral, and that would then mean that the yavam who gets the apples and the ownership of the apples couldn't sell them. He'd have to essentially take the value of the apples to buy more, you know, cherry orchard with them. Now, the Mishnah makes it sound like it's a mad rush to grab the apples after the death of the first husband. That's simply not the case. Once the first husband's dead, everything goes over to the Yavam, the brother, the living brother, and assuming, again, that what's detached from the ground, the Chum say, is totally, you know, not encumbered at all. So the Mishnah's saying here there's a rush. What we're talking about is a rush for her to grab these apples before her husband dies, okay? In which case, she could hold them as additional collateral. But the Mishnah says inside, hatalushin min hakarka, anything that's detached from the ground, like apples in the barrel, kol hakodim zacha behen, which literally means whoever goes first, he or she gets the right to them. What we mean is whoever grabs these barrel of apples, whether it's he or she, will have rights as follows. Kadam hu, if the yavam gets a hold of the barrel of apples and he takes them, meaning she didn't grab them before her husband died. So then zacha, then they're his, free and clear, and do not collateralize her ksub at all, say the chachamim. Kadmahi, however, if she grabbed them first, meaning she grabbed the barrel of apples to hold them as collateral, as a mashkon, prior to her first husband's death, then she did a thing to her advantage, and the din will be yilakach ben karka. He, the second husband, will have to now sell those barrel of apples, which she's holding as collateral as a mashkon. He'll have to sell them, and yilakach ben karka. He purchases new land with the proceeds, you know, another cherry orchard. V'u'ochel peros, and he gets to eat the cherries that are growing on those trees. Now, like new paragraph, if you will. Kanasa, if the Yavam now marries the widow. Kanasa means he brings her in. That means he takes her as a wife. That means they're living together. It's Yibum. Yibum is affected by them sleeping together. So once she moves in, they're sleeping together. So now, Hare Hik Ishto L'chol Davar. Now she, the widow, becomes the Yavam's wife, like a regular wife in every matter. There's no difference whatsoever. Ubilvad, with the following exception, and that's the exception we've said already, Shetehei Ksubasa Al Nichse Bala Harishon, that the collateral, which guarantees the payment of her ksuba, it's only the original property that came in from her first husband. That's all that is encumbered, that has a lien on it by her ksuba. But anything that he, the second husband, owned is totally unencumbered. He can do with it what he sees fit. It's just the stuff that he inherits from his brother that he can't sell. Now, the fact that the Mishnah said, Hare Hik Ish L'chol Davar, is a little strange. Means she's his wife in all matters. So that tells you a couple things. It's based on Psukim and there's Limurim, but the bottom line is, it's telling you a couple important things. Number one is, the rule is you cannot marry your late brother's wife. That's against the Torah, severe Isser. Nevertheless, it's an exception if you're doing it for the sake of Yibum. So what happens if the second brother now divorces the Yavama? Can he remarry her? Do we say it's like his wife and he can remarry her? Or do we say, no, now she carries the stigma of being his late brother's wife and she is forbidden to remarry? The Mishnah is saying, no, she's like his wife in all matters, meaning he could remarry her. Similarly, you might have thought erroneously that he could get rid of her after marrying her with chalitza as opposed to a get. But the answer is no. Once they perform Yibum and they sleep together, so then the only way for them to dissolve that marriage is the conventional way with a get. Okay. Now, halacha l'maisa is interesting. The rule is that the halacha would be like t'chachamim, meaning that metaltlin, movable objects are not encumbered, meaning that while the Yavam may not sell like the land that he inherits from his brother, he could sell the movables. However, subsequent to that, meaning after the Gemara was closed, the Gaonim, like I'll call near 800 or 900 of the common era, that kind of time, maybe it's 700 or 600, I don't know, they ruled and made a takana that also metaltlin, the movable, should also serve as collateral for a woman to collect her ksuba. That being the case, some Rishonim learn that the halacha sort of swings in favor of Meir now, saying that he, the second husband, may not even sell the metaltlin, the movables. Some Rishonim hold that way. Other Rishonim, most notably the Rambam, say absolutely not. The point was to help a regular conventional wife collect, but not to sort of make the second, the Yavam, be, you know, encumbered, so he couldn't sell the property, so that becomes machlokes Rishonim. At all events, really, like nowadays, we don't do Yibim at all, it's only Chalitza, so the whole thing doesn't get off the ground, and really, this wouldn't come to be halacha l'maisa anyways.